Welcome back to the Our Voices feed. I'm Aaron White, the North America editor for Our Economy. What you are about to listen to here is an interview conducted by myself and our podcast producer, Freddie Stewart, with Lauren Ashcraft, who is running for the U.S. House to represent New York's 12th congressional district. The district encompasses the wealthiest zip code in the United States, the Upper East Side, as well as parts of Lower Manhattan and Western Queens. She is primarying Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, who is serving her 14th term in Congress and is the current chair of the House Oversight Committee. A former project manager for JPMorgan Chase and a comedian, Ashcraft identifies as a Democratic socialist, advocating for a Green New Deal, Medicare for all, canceling student debt, and universal child care. She has been endorsed by Brand New Congress, former presidential candidate Marianne Williamson, and the New York chapter of U.S. Youth Climate Strike. We interviewed Ashcraft several months ago in Long Island City, Queens, where we discussed the staggering levels of wealth inequality within the district and what her top legislative priorities would be if she were to win her race. So we began by asking her about what inspired her to run for office.
Started listening to Bernie Sanders' message. The first time I heard it, I was listening to how he's saying that corporate money is corrupting our politics, and it didn't resonate with me the first like 10 times he said it. Because it's just such a different message than you're used to hearing. Like from the establishment Democrats, all we hear is just how bad the Republicans are. But there's a much bigger story that even within the Democratic Party, there's such a divide between establishment and corporate funded and people powered. And so when that message finally hit me, I was kind of speechless and had a moment where I just realized how broken our political system is. Actually, it's not broken. When I think about it, it's working exactly as it was intended. And we are breaking it by running as people who shouldn't be running. So Bernie Sanders was one of my biggest inspirations. And unfortunately, and I regret this to this day, I was registered, I believe, as an independent and didn't change my registration in time and was one of the people that couldn't vote in that primary. And this time I am really, really ready to get out and vote for the guy that inspired me to get involved in the first place.
So you're running against Carolyn Maloney, who's been in power since 1992. I believe that since the death of Elijah Cummings, she's now leading the House Oversight Committee, obviously one of the most powerful kind of Democrats in Congress. Can you speak a little bit to some of the structural impediments that that creates for you running, such as resources, but also like people rallying behind you and maybe afraid to go after someone that powerful?
You know what is, it even shocks me, is people just don't know who she is. People in the district, we've been knocking on doors since March of 2019 and connecting with thousands and thousands of people all the time. And it's so rare that somebody out in the district knows who she even is. So it just goes to show that there definitely is a pocket of staunch supporters of Representative Maloney, but if we get people out to vote, it's really a winnable election, and it's we're seeing the movement form with us. I'm not seeing, other than the fact that if you look up how much she's fundraised, it's quite a lot, and it's quite a lot of corporate PAC money, but it being an impediment to us, I haven't seen it yet.
A lot of people listening to this, particularly from our international audience, won't know much about your district. So obviously you're running in New York's 12th district. Yeah. And a lot of people will, you know, as you say, they don't know who Carolyn Maloney is. A lot of people, particularly internationally, will have heard of someone like AOC, who managed a primary so successfully in 2018. Could you tell us a little bit about what you can learn from AOC's campaign in your own district? I know they're quite different.
Yeah, you're so right. Every district is very unique. Mine is unique in that people know it for being a rich district. And unfortunately, that stereotype comes from a very specific part of the district, which is not where we're sitting. It's across the river. And whenever I think of New York's 12th district, I think about economic inequality. And it's the home of Billionaire Row. It's also, unfortunately, the home of thousands of people that sleep on the street every single night. And over 20,000 people in the district don't have any health insurance at all and probably avoid going to the doctor and ration their medication because they're afraid of going bankrupt. And it's also the home of about 53,000 people that have disabilities that have gone completely ignored by our representative. So when I think of New York's 12th district, it certainly does have extremely wealthy people, but it also has people who are really struggling that deserve to have that full and equal representation. And that's exactly why I'm running, is so that we're listening to them on our canvassing and door knocking tours. It's more of a listening tour where we are asking what issues they're facing. We take notes. We have a database where I'm making sure that I'm advocating in the best way possible by listening. And literally, we've been told so many times that we're the first people to ever knock on their doors. So that's really where the election can be won, is we are really out there listening to people and letting them know about the election and letting them know why it's so important and what issues we can actually fight for rather than allow the status quo to continue.
So starting in 2018, we saw the rise of groups like Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress, which is behind your campaign. So I was wondering if you can kind of speak to the significance of the process of challenging incumbents within the Democratic Party, because even if we get a Bernie Sanders presidency or a progressive president, we're going to have to change the composition within the Democratic Party, which is so often so corporate minded.
So I am so lucky to be part of Brand New Congress. And part of being in Brand New Congress is being part of this coalition of people who 9 out of 10 times have never done this before. It's a terrifying process to put yourself out there. I know my family is extremely private, and when you look at how AOC's family has just been completely harassed, it is a huge concern of mine. And we're just regular people that are really passionate about this movement and are taking huge risks. So having a coalition of people to share those experiences with and ask questions, and we're all supporting each other and making sure that everyone's informed of the best way to move forward if we can help each other. So there are impediments to us running, such as just knowing that certain clubs and organizations will never back somebody like me. But for every organization like that, there's a group of progressives that do care. So it's a really interesting time, and I will just be so thrilled if any of the people on the Brand New Congress slate get elected. But if we all do, there will be so much change that can happen.
So you talk about it's a terrifying experience running in this primary process, you know, the difficulties you've had with raising money, etc., and what you're coming up against is, you know, a well-oiled machine in terms of resources. Obviously, we're recording this at the end of January. Your primary is in June. How do you feel like this is going to get harder for you as you get closer to the deadline? How do you feel that as you progress and your campaign gets bigger, what are you worried about in terms of structural impediments and, you know, the opposition mounting against you?
Well, one of the things that has been hard is just the unforeseeable expenses. Like there's an app that you just absolutely have to have, that $7,500 that I just had to rip the Band-Aid off and buy. And one of the ways to prevent people like me from being on the ballot is to sue, to go through our ballot petitions and see if there's any invalid signatures and take it to court. And so we have decided it's important that we hired an attorney. So just all the expense that you can't even imagine, especially if this is your first time, the fundraising for that is quite difficult. And our average donation, we just looked on ActBlue yesterday, it went down to $14, which I'm very proud of. And when I look at the average occupation of the person who donates to me, it's actually unemployed. So I'm really moved by that, because I'm actually very sorry that people have to give to campaigns in order to see them thrive. But I am really honored that people see hope in my campaign and think that it's worth their investment. So it is an impediment to just see so many maxed out donations just fly into Carolyn Maloney's bank account, but we're out there and we're almost at six figures of fundraising, and things like that $7,500 app make me very nervous, but I just have to get over it. And just having such a supportive team of people who are doing this for the first time or third time, it's a very diverse team. There are impediments and it's intimidating, but whenever you have a movement and a team behind you, I'm just excited.
What are some of your top legislative priorities when you get into office? What are you going to start off by trying to achieve?
We absolutely need to attack big money in politics. So many problems are just tied to this single issue of corporate PAC money and lobby money being thrown at politicians. I'll use Carolyn Maloney as an example because this is a very current issue. When you look at her campaign donations, about $58,000 from her career comes from defense contractors. And whenever you look at the fact that she voted for the AOMF that gave now three presidents unilateral power to create havoc throughout the globe, she voted for the Iraq war, she voted against the Iran nuclear deal, and now she voted for the inflated military budget. So nothing that she's done in terms of claiming to be anti-war makes sense to me, except when I look at her campaign donations and the fact that she would have to give that $58,000 back in order to stop being hypocritical when she talks about war. So she doesn't seem willing to do that. We have so many politicians that would be able to make a difference in our society, but when you look at the money that they accept, they just can't. And so that's why it's so important that groups like Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress are running completely people-powered candidates that aren't accepting corporate PAC money or lobby money, because we're not bought by these corporations that people like Carolyn Maloney are.
Just going further a little bit on the military-industrial complex, I know Trump recently announced his Israel peace plan. I was wondering if you can kind of comment on that recently passed and where you would stand on that issue.
I am completely appalled that we have ignored the rights of Palestinians. And I actually really appreciate and support Bernie Sanders calling for preconditions to our aid in any country abroad, but including Israel, because we should not be giving money and weapons and military support to anyone that ends up using it to harm civilians. And we're seeing so many human rights violations when we look at how Palestinians have been treated. And I stand for equality of all humans. So I'm very, very against the direction that we're going.
Just to get your thoughts on a couple of other topics while we have you here.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that you're in favor of Medicare for All.
Yes, single payer.
Where would you stand on the idea of cancellation of student debts?
Yes, I'm so passionate about this and single payer Medicare for All, because again, we've just allowed profit to be prioritized over people in so many different ways. Whenever I think about the fact that my insurance company said that I had to have my doctor call them and tell them that I actually needed my medicine for it to be covered, it's terrible. So I don't know, other than lobby money in politics, why we've allowed such a system to exist. So yeah, we need to get the for-profit middleman out of the equation. And between me and my doctor, if my doctor says that I need something, there shouldn't be anything standing in the way of me getting that medication. And in terms of student debt, I have been really, really lucky. I went to West Virginia University, which is not the most expensive place to go, but I was lucky to also go there on a scholarship and worked the whole way through. And I left undergrad without debt, which is very rare. And then I went to a grad school on scholarship and worked the whole way through grad school and left grad school with no debt. And I would never recommend anyone doing that, because I definitely shaved off multiple years from my life. But the fact that I have been able to start something like a 401k, and that being so rare for somebody who's 30 years old, I think about the fact that I have some retirement and so many other people my age are only paying the principal on their student loans, and they're not even thinking about retirement. They won't be for multiple decades because they're just stuck. We're not allowing people to invest in their families and their futures. You shouldn't have to have a full-time job while going to school full-time in order to be able to have a retirement account someday. So it's completely ridiculous. We should abolish student debt and also make higher education free so that people don't keep ending up in this situation.
And lastly, I know that we were talking a little bit earlier about the Sunrise Movement and how some you have some members that are working on your campaign. And just more broadly, we've seen the rise of this young student activism from Greta Thunberg coming over, Fridays for Future, Sunrise, Extinction Rebellion. I'm assuming that you're for a Green New Deal.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you can kind of imagine what a Green New Deal would mean for this district, New York 12. I know that Hurricane Sandy, I was actually living in the Lower East Side, and it happened, and we lost power for a week or so, and we have really high rates of pollution here in Queens. So I'm wondering if you can kind of think about what would it mean for your constituents here.
Yeah. So in so many ways, my neighbors, our constituents, have just carried the costs and burden of us not taking aggressive enough stances on this climate crisis. When we look at something like East River Park, that park actually has to be buried, elevated, and a flood wall has to be installed because New York City's sea levels are rising at 1.5 times the rate of anywhere else on this globe. So we are feeling the burden here over anywhere else. Whenever I look at Newtown Creek and floods actually poison into our environment because it is a Superfund site, I think about how much this district has been neglected and how much we could have prevented people from having to carry that cost of neglect. If Carolyn Maloney had, like, I think about the fact that AOC has made the Green New Deal part of our everyday conversation, and she's been in office for a year. When I think about the fact that Carolyn Maloney's been in office since 93, what if she had taken an aggressive stance on needing to fight for our environment 26 years ago? And what if she just never stopped talking about it? And studies have been around showing how dangerous this direction we're moving in is. People like Bernie Sanders have been talking about it for a very long time. And finally, AOC came and just made it such a huge part of her candidacy and also her time in office. And we're seeing that the newest members of Congress are able to actually push for radical change that we need because they aren't bought by corporations. And I would be really honored to fight in that way and advocate for my neighbors in New York's 12th district, but also everything we do to fight for our environment benefits the entire globe.
So just final thought before we wrap up. Obviously, Green New Deal, Medicare for All, canceling student debt, free tuition. This is a socialist platform, and you're clearly running to the left of the establishment candidate. But if you manage to make it into the House of Representatives, you're clearly going to have to deal with a very establishment centrist party leadership. And I wondered if you had any thoughts, or if you thought that far ahead, how you might deal with that once you come to face it.
You know what's really funny about my background is I come from steel and coal country. And I think that actually has turned into a strength of mine because I grew up just being surrounded by people who think very conservatively, and including a lot of members of my family. And I'm a democratic socialist, and I'm fighting for a democratic socialist platform, and I'm supporting Bernie Sanders wholeheartedly. And so whenever I talk with my family, at first they were like, whoa, you're going to run for office as a Democratic, what? And now they're on board. My parents lost their health insurance. My dad was laid off from his job, and they're just burning through whatever retirement they thought they had because they're paying out of pocket for Obamacare. And that's not something that a lot of people think will happen at the very end of their career. And the fact that this happened to my family is just, you know, they were already thinking that healthcare shouldn't be tied to your employer. But the fact that around this time, this happened, that they were also hearing messages about single-payer Medicare for all, It's really resonating with my family, and they're not democratic socialists. So I think if we're able to put our politics aside a little bit and think about just being human a little bit, it will be very helpful. And the more people that are people powered that get into office, the more that these conversations will be very fruitful. So if brand new Congress's slate gets into office, this is looking really good. But every single election cycle, it's going to be more and more people that are fighting for the right things.
Thank you for listening to this Our Voices podcast from Open Democracy. If you enjoyed this podcast and would encourage others to listen, why not head to iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a review? Open Democracy is an independent global media platform that is only possible because of your kind donations. To find out more or to make a donation, head to opendemocracy.net.